Good day, and welcome to the Cigna Autism Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Kristen Martzen. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Amber. Welcome, and thank you for calling into Cigna's Autism Awareness Series. My name is Kristen Martzen, and I'm the lead clinician for the autism team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of this conference, you will be transferred into a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After this survey, you will be able to ask questions on today's presentation. A handout for today's seminar is available online at www.cigna.com/autism. Scroll to the current topics section in the middle of your page and click on today's topic labeled Shaping New Behaviors. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information, if your policy covers topics discussed in today's seminar, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Today I have the pleasure of introducing Wendy Zabaios. Wendy has practiced in the field of behavior analysis for over 14 years and has been working mainly with children and adolescents with autism or other developmental disabilities. Wendy specializes in early intervention, verbal behavior, and works intensively with children who have severe language delays. In the process, she trains parents to work effectively with their children to improve communication, compliance, and to use behavioral strategies such as positive reinforcement. Wendy, thank you for being here today. You are welcome to start your presentation.
Thank you, Kristen, for the introduction. Good afternoon, parents. Today's topic is titled Shaping New Behaviors. I hope that by the end of this hour, you're able to implement simple techniques that will assist in teaching your child new skills. We will begin by discussing common problems parents face. Some examples of those problems would be, my child does not have the skills to perform a specific task. For this problem, the therapist or parent will focus on acquisition skills, specifically prerequisite skills that are needed to obtain the goal. For example, if your goal is to teach your child to read, we need to start with basic prerequisites such as attending skills, making sure that your child recognizes all the letters of the alphabet and the corresponding sounds before we would begin to teach a reading program. Another problem may be my child has the skill, but he does not perform the task. To address this problem, the therapist or parent will focus on teaching generalization skills and on increasing compliance. You want to make sure under what conditions your child is performing the task and under what conditions your child is not. If it is a generalization issue, we have to develop a program to make sure that his response is consistent across different individuals and different environments. A third problem is my child cannot tolerate certain elements of the task. In dealing with this problem, the therapist or parent will teach all the elements of the task individually and spending more time focusing on elements that are challenging for the child. For example, visiting the dentist. Your child may be extremely compliant, but when you go and take him to the dentist, he is refusing to open his mouth. He's having meltdowns. When we look at these components, we need to look at what is causing those behaviors. If it is a fear of the environment, then we need to develop a program to teach him to be comfortable in the environment. Currently, I'm working with a child, and he's fear of the dental tools. So my main program is just getting him used to the various dental tools until we can bring him back into the dental environment and teach him that there is no difference between the tools we use at home with him and the tools that the dentist will present when they check for just good hygiene and do a dental cleaning. And lastly, another common problem is my child will not follow directions. With this problem, the therapist or parent would focus on increasing compliance and targeting directions that are already in the child's repertoire before introducing the new goal. You want to make sure that your child is attending. You want to make sure that your child is compliant with simple instructions before we can move on to teaching new skills. Before discussing specific behavioral teaching approaches, I would like to spend some time talking about reinforcement and its importance in shaping and or changing behavior. Reinforcement is referred to anything that increases the likelihood that a response will occur. it is important to mention that reinforcement is defined by the effect that it has on behavior. It is increasing or strengthening a behavior. If a behavior is not increasing, if the behavior is decreasing, then we are not using reinforcement. So you want to keep in mind that reinforcement is always increasing a behavior. For example, reinforcement might involve presenting praise, the reward, immediately after a child puts away her toys, the child's response. By reinforcing the desired behavior with praise, the child will be more likely to perform the same action again. So how often does reinforcement or should reinforcement occur? It depends on what you're teaching. Reinforcement can occur on a continuous basis. It can occur on a fixed schedule, dependent on a certain number of responses that you set for the child, and it also can occur on an intermittent schedule. When I talk about continuous reinforcement, this means that it occurs every time the behavior occurs. For example, every time Kai signs eat, I give him a snack, because that is a behavior that I want to reinforce. So every time he gives me an eat sign, I'm going to provide him with something to eat. When I look at a fixed schedule of reinforcement, it depends on the number of set responses. For example, if I want to get my child to be a little bit more independent, I will set a number of responses before he contacts the reward. I will blow bubble after Kai has completed 3 math problems. So if Kai completes 1 math problem, he does not contact the reward. If he completes 2 math problems, he still will not contact the reward. But if he completes 3 problems, that's when he's contacting the reward. And the ideal schedule is an intermittent schedule. So after Kai has read for an average of 5 minutes, I may offer a break. Now, when we use intermittent schedules, it's because we are promoting more independence, and it also produces active responding from the child. He knows that he's going to get something. He just doesn't know when he's going to get it, but we've already established that when you do what mom asks you to do, when you do what your therapist asks you to do, good things happen. How do we present rewards? Well, there are many different types of rewards. Remember, every child is different, and you know your child best and what motivates them. So for some children, praise is sufficient, and for others, they may need something a little bit more stronger, tangible, an activity-based, or even a sensory-based reward. Children can be rewarded after a particular behavior, and an example of this would be if you complete your math worksheet, you can earn 10 extra minutes on the trampoline. Remember, when we're looking at reinforcement, we are increasing a behavior, and the reinforcer is the reward that we're handing over to the child. So let them know, this is exactly what I want you to do. Why is reinforcement so important? Well, I believe that everyone would rather be praised for their good job rather than reprimanded for a bad job, and children are no different. It is important, and it's also very motivating for me to work harder when someone tells me what a great job I'm doing on a regular basis than when someone criticizes my not-so-good moments. Research has demonstrated that children respond best when you give enthusiastic praise for specific things that they are doing well. You want to make teaching fun. You want to establish a positive relationship with your child so that when you begin to teach things that may be difficult for them, they understand that when I do things for mom, good things happen. So why should we use positive reinforcement? Well, positive reinforcement is simple to learn and use. It helps your child feel good about him or herself. It builds a positive relationship between you and your child, and it also creates a positive environment. And all these components are very important when you're teaching your child new skills. Simply stated, positive reinforcement is a very simple technique that can help turn your child's behavior around fairly quickly. Positive reinforcement reinforces what the child is doing right rather than concentrating on what your child is doing wrong. It increases the likelihood that the behavior will be repeated. It supports your child's positive actions, qualities through descriptive encouragement and natural rewards. It also works best when it isn't a once-in-a-while thing. The more it happens, the more effective it is, and this is why it's so important to find time throughout your day to reward your child for doing simple things that you're proud of. Thank you for sitting so nicely. Thank you for coming. When I called you the first time, thank you for putting your backpack away. Find different times of the day where you are providing your child with this simple praise so that you can start creating a positive relationship with your child. Well, now that we understand the impact that reinforcement has on behavior, let's discuss how we begin to teach new skills using behavioral teaching strategies. We will begin with the cycle of instruction. And this is how we present instructions when we're teaching any skills. We look at the instruction, we look at the response, and we look at the consequence. Please remember to reinforce as quickly as possible to strengthen the desired behavior. So an example of this would be the instruction being stand up, the response, child stands up, the consequence, you can take a break now. In an ideal world, our children will listen to us every time we ask them to do something, but as a therapist and as parents, we know that that may not be the case every single time. And what ends up happening is we accidentally reinforce inappropriate behaviors. We're still following the same cycle of instruction. We're still giving our child an instruction. We're waiting to see what that response is, and then we provide the consequence. In looking at an example where you accidentally may reinforce an inappropriate behavior, the instruction can still be stand up. The child's response is to drop and scream in the middle of a supermarket, and your consequence in an effort to end the tantrum as quickly as possible may be to say, if you stand up, you can have a cookie. If you stand up, I will give you a gummy. If you stand up, you can play with the Nintendo or the iPad. And this is very important because, yes, you're stopping the behavior, but you're also teaching him when you engage in this inappropriate behavior, you're going to get something that you like. And that's when teaching new skills becomes so important because we need to use a different strategy. We need to give the instructions. We need to know what the response from the child should be, and we should always have an appropriate consequence. If the child is tantruming, that is not a time to offer rewards. But if a child is listening and does exactly what you've asked them to do, then that's a time to reward the behavior. The behavioral approach to teaching new skills has four components. One, we have to decide on a target. We have to reduce that complex skill into smaller elements. We use prompts and prompt fading to teach individual elements. And, of course, we use reinforcement to strengthen the behavior. So looking at what the target is, you need to decide what it is you want to teach your child. Are you going to teach him to brush his teeth? Are you going to teach him to complete a math worksheet without arguing with you, dressing skills, riding a bike, or going to the dentist without any refusals once you get in the car? Once you've figured out that target, then you start to break that task down into more manageable steps. You want to reinforce what your child is already doing well, and then you want to focus on the specific skills that are challenging for your child. Then you want to use prompts to assist them so that they can contact that reward. And as quickly as you offer that assistance, remember the ultimate goal is to get your child to do things independently. So you have to fade back your assistance. And, of course, always reinforce the appropriate behavior. So when looking at the pictures below, if I want to teach my child to brush her teeth, and my starting point is looking at picture number one, that she is pouring an immense amount of toothpaste onto that toothbrush, and that's my starting point. I need to teach her the appropriate amount that goes on that toothbrush. And if you look at picture number two, you have a child that's a little bit more concentrated on the activity, and there he goes in about the amount she's putting on that toothbrush. And finally, the ultimate goal is now she knows how much toothpaste goes on that toothbrush. Now she knows that the next step is to brush her teeth, and you as a parent are right there reinforcing every step. So some of the common procedures utilized to teach new skills are imitation training, shaping, differential reinforcement, and prompts. And I will discuss all these teaching procedures in length. in the following slides. We'll begin with imitation training. Imitation skills are extremely important for the development of language, play, and social skills. We all learn by watching others and copying their actions. Unfortunately, imitation skills may not develop naturally for children with autism and other developmental disabilities. If this is the case for your child, these skills must be taught directly and systematically. So it's best to start with simple toys. The parent or therapist can demonstrate an action with one toy and prompt the child to engage in the same action with another toy, with the identical toy. For example, you bang on a drum and then you prompt the child to bang on his or her own drum. After he completes the action, you praise and you provide other rewards such as favorite toys. Some children may begin to learn these skills after practicing a few times. Others may need many months of practice. Okay, again, you want to keep teaching fun. You want to keep teaching brief, but it's also very important to follow your child's lead, and you want to teach at your child's pace. And before we begin any teaching approach, whether we're using an imitation teaching approach, whether we're using shaping, we want to make sure that we assess the prerequisite skills. So assessing prerequisite skills is necessary prior to using any approach. If we want our teaching approach to be effective, we need to make sure that we have a child that is ready to learn the way we are going to teach. So for the goal of imitation training, the goal of imitation training is to teach children to do what the person providing the model does. Okay, and to use this technique, your child has to have an imitative repertoire. Now remember, for some children that are on the spectrum, learning to imitate is a difficult task. So one of the things you want to assess if you're going to use imitation training as a teaching component is assess whether or not your child has those prerequisite attending skills. You might want to ask, can my child remain seated? You might want to ask, can my child look at me? Can my child look at objects? Can my child keep his hands in his lap? And if your child can do all of these skills, then we're ready to use imitation training as a teaching component. But if your child can't, then you need to start with those basics. So let's say your child cannot remain seated. The first thing you want to do is you want to set a criteria. Okay, I need him to listen to me for at least 5 minutes. So the first step to that would be, Johnny, come take a seat, and you reinforce him just approaching the chair, not even sitting down, because eventually we will get him to not only approach the chair, but sit down and wait. We have to get him to contact that reward, and he has to understand that when I do what Mom asks me to do, great things happen. So we'll start with Johnny approaching the chair, rewarding that behavior, then Johnny, please sit down, and I'm going to show you what sitting down is like, and you can physically guide him to sit, or you can show him how to sit, and then you add the waiting component, which is now we got Johnny approaching the chair, Johnny sitting on the chair, and now Johnny waiting, and you can use counting as a great tool to get them to sit there for longer periods of time. So Johnny, let's wait, 1, 2, 3, offer that reward. The next step is come sit down, awesome job. Let's wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, offer that reward and systematically keep increasing your time until you reach your goal of 3 minutes or 5 minutes. And then, again, assess whether or not imitation training is the teaching tool you want to use to teach new skills. Some of the guidelines for imitation training. You want to make sure that the teaching is active and brief. You want to reward both prompted and imitative responses. So back to the Johnny example, at the first time, Johnny, come take a seat. I'm going to show you what sitting down looks like, and I'm going to reward that because in the end, that's what I want him to understand. When you engage in this behavior, and here, Mommy is helping you so that you are correct and there's no room for error, then you can contact that reward. You always want to pair your verbal praise, awesome, great job, you're doing fantastic, with a tangible reward, something that means a little bit more to them. Now remember, for some children, praise is sufficient. For other children, it's not. But it's always good to pair both with something, with praise and with a powerful reward. If your child's progress breaks down, back up, and move ahead slowly. I can't stress this enough. If you feel that your child is taking 3 steps back, then go back and start reinforcing basic steps of compliance until we can get him back to the goal. Don't consider this a setback. This will keep the teaching active. This will keep the teaching positive. This will keep the teaching fun. So going back a couple of times is not a big deal, but it is important to follow your child's lead and also to teach at your child's pace. Remember to also, as quickly as you offer that assistance, whether it's verbal assistance, whether it's physical assistance, to fade out those prompts, because the ultimate goal, whether we're using imitation training or we're using shaping, is to get your child to do things as independently as possible. And then once you are ready to move into a different teaching approach, you can stop the imitation training when your child consistently imitates others. Now remember, children that are on the spectrum may also have difficulty generalizing, so it is very important that what your child is doing for you, he or she is also doing for other members of the family, and it's always good to bring in dad, to bring in siblings, and say, can you ask Johnny to do this? And if Johnny can respond to various individuals and in various environments, then you're ready to move on to other skills. So an example of imitation training. When done correctly, a parent says, do this, as the parent is touching his or her nose. The child imitates that action. The parent says, awesome, and gives a tangible reward. Now we'll move on to shaping. Shaping is another commonly used method to teach new skills. This method involves encouraging and rewarding successive approximations of the new behavior until the behavior is learned. Shaping is used to teach various skills. It's used to expand language skills. It's used to increase appropriate eating behaviors. It's used to teach appropriate hygiene behaviors, brushing teeth, hand washing, dressing, and it's also very successful when you have a child that is fearful of going to the doctor or the dentist. Let's talk about the definition of shaping. Shaping is the reinforcement of successive approximations of a target behavior. Okay, so if your target behavior is to get your child to go to the dentist without engaging in any meltdowns, then we start with the basics, just driving around the dentist and having your child remain calm in the car without crying. So we slowly start to reinforce anything, any behaviors that your child is engaging that's positive that's going to lead to our ultimate goal, which is getting him to go to the dentist without having meltdowns. Shaping is also a way of adding a new behavior to a child's repertoire. You know, this is important when you're teaching new academic skills, when you're teaching your child to ride a bike. So it's a very effective method to get them to, again, the end result of the target behavior we're wanting to reinforce by starting with very small steps to that target behavior. Shaping is also used when the target behavior does not exist. So if it is a brand new behavior you're trying to teach, you decide what your initial point is and all the steps that are needed to get to that end goal. So remember that in shaping, you're rewarding any behavior that is a closer approximation of the target behavior than the behavior you rewarded last. So you're always moving up a step. Shaping shares certain features of the game hot and cold, and this is a perfect example. In playing hot and cold, you reward any movement that takes the child closer to the prize. Each of those successive movements is a closer approximation to the desired behavior. If the prize is under the couch, the child is moving towards the couch. Every time the child takes a step towards the couch, you're yelling and you're very enthusiastic and you're saying hotter. You're rewarding that behavior, and it's very likely that that child is going to get closer and closer to the couch. If the child moves away from the couch, then you would yell colder. Your voice might change a little bit. You're not giving him any more clue because ideally you want him to get closer to the couch, not away from the couch. When looking at shaping behaviors, you want to look at what we call differential reinforcement. And basically what this is, it's a process that rewards only the appropriate responses and discontinues rewards for all other responses. And this is important when we're using shaping, because if our goal is to get a child to wear glasses and we've gotten to the point where he's touching the glasses and we're ready for him to pick up those glasses, then at one point we stop rewarding touching glasses. We only reward him for picking up those glasses. So the basic principle of differential reinforcement is discrimination. We're teaching children how to discriminate. If I do this, this is where I contact the reward. If I do these behaviors, then I have no contact with the reward. So an example would be reward your child for cleaning his or her room before bedtime and withhold the reward when your child does not clean his or her room. Assuming that what we are providing as a reward is reinforcing for your child, then it should increase your child's cleaning behavior prior to bedtime. Let's talk a little bit about successive approximations. Shaping begins with rewarding responses that will lead to the target behaviors. So we have to pick any response that will lead to our target behavior. If a new approximation to the target behavior does not occur, then you reward the last approximation. Again, you still want to make teaching fun and you still want to be delivering rewards for appropriate behaviors. It's important to also set a limit. How many times you're going to reinforce a behavior before you're ready to move to the next step. So if an approximation is repeated and rewarded 3 times, then you can start to withhold the reward the next time the behavior appears, thus teaching your child that gradual increases to our ultimate target response is what we are going to be reinforcing. Now, if no approximations to the target behaviors appear, then you have to go back to previously rewarded behavior. And again, do not consider this a setback. You just have to go back 1 or 2 behaviors and start the reteaching process again. So, for example, looking at successive approximations, if your child is unable to wave bye-bye, any attempt to raise a hand or arm in response to your waving bye-bye is rewarded. Okay, it may begin only with a slight movement, and as the child gets closer to raising her arm and moving her hand, you wait until both occur before you give that reward. So again, you're starting to shape what you want it to look like. So we started with just a simple raised hand, and now it's not only a simple raised hand, it's also a movement of her arm and hand. The child learns that more is expected of her and in gradual steps until the whole wave action is learned. So the shaping process, and I love this example because it is very true. The shaping process can be very similar to helping your child up a staircase. Every so often, the progress is effortless and it goes by very quickly, and other times it is very slow and difficult. Okay, so at times your child may leap over to the next step and you think you have it, and then he may return and go down the steps, and you have to help him get back up those same steps. So follow your child's lead. If regression occurs, take a few steps back and then keep moving until you make it to your terminal goal. Here are the steps of a shaping process. Select target behavior. So select whether you want to teach toothbrushing, whether you want to teach hair cutting, whether you want to teach dressing or completing a math worksheet without arguing with your child. Then once you do that, you can move to step 2, which is select the initial behavior that your child currently performs and that resembles the target behavior in some way. So let's go back to the waving example. Your child raising their arm slightly is getting me to my goal of eventually getting her to wave bye-bye. So you want to pick a behavior that resembles it in some way because you're going to be tweaking that behavior until you get your end result. Select powerful rewards. That is step 3. And this is important. Remember, reinforcement increases behavior. If you're giving out candy and you're not seeing an increase in behavior, then reinforcement isn't occurring, and we need to look at what else can motivate your child to get us to reward the behaviors we want to see more of. Okay? Step 4, reward the initial behavior until it occurs frequently. So set your criteria. You have a child that the minute you say, Johnny, come here, he's already running towards you, you're ready to move on to the next step. Okay? Reward successive approximations of the target behavior each time they occur. You want to send the signal that when you do what I'm asking you to do, and I am even willing to help you, then great things happen, and you can have snack, you can have extra iPad time, you can have anything you want. And step 6, reward the target behavior each time it occurs. And once you have steps 1 through 6, remember the goal is to get your child to do this as independently as possible. So you have to start changing your schedule of reinforcement. Don't reinforce every single response. Wait a little bit. Start reinforcing on an average of 5 responses or on an average of 5 minutes and see how your child's performance is. If he's performing well, we're ready to move on. If he's not, then we're ready to bring back the rewards and move back a few steps until we can get him to our end goal. So here's an example on how to use shaping procedures to teach someone to wear glasses. Some children have difficulties with anything that touches their face. And this is a perfect example how we would teach someone who is not familiar with wearing glasses and needs to wear glasses to get them to that ultimate goal. So we will begin by just having the child touch glasses. And we can say, touch your glasses, and you start reinforcing that single step. And you do it one time, and you contact the reward. You do it again, and you give the reward. You do it a third time, and you give the reward. So now when you call Johnny and you show him the glasses, he's ready to touch it. That means he's ready to move on to the next step. So the next step, just like a staircase, we went from touching the glasses to now touching the glasses and picking up the glasses. So we're not going to provide that reward for touching the glasses any longer. We're going to provide that reward for touching the glasses and picking it up. And once we do that and we reinforce that 3 to 5 times and he's doing it consistently, then we're ready to move to step 3, which involves touching the glasses, picking up the glasses, and again, we're not going to reinforce these two behaviors because our next goal is to get him to put the glasses close to his face. And then we move on to step 4, touching the glasses, picking up the glasses, putting the glasses close to his face, and finally placing the glasses in the proper position. And this is very important because we went from just reinforcing touching the glasses to now engaging in 3 different responses before contacting the reward. But if there's regression, then we just take a step back because we've already set out the number of steps that your child needs to master to get to the end goal. Another example is shaping to increase academics. So Kai's tantrums every time he is asked to write spelling words. A lot of the time, if you're in first and second grade, you have to write 10 spelling words 2 times each, and this may be very overwhelming for certain children. So shaping can be used to get your child to complete academic tasks without engaging in the inappropriate behavior. So I broke it down into steps, and I broke down into 6 specific steps. So step 1, Kai will write his name at the top of the spelling worksheet, and that's what you reinforce. You can say, Kai comes to down, all you need to do is write your name. He contacts the reward. So the next time you call him, it's not such a big deal because he didn't have to sit for an hour writing 40 spelling words. He just had to write his name. Step 2, Kai will write 1 spelling word of his choice. Now you've increased a little bit, but not too much. Kai, come sit down, write your name. Awesome job. Now, can you write one spelling word and you pick any spelling word of your choice and mom will help you with the rest. Okay? Not a big deal. He's coming. The effort is still not very long. And he's contacting rewards. So, wow, when I go over to mom, I'm getting anything I want and I don't have to do a lot of work. So you're creating that positive relationship, you're creating that positive environment, and you're not dealing with the tantrums. Step number three, Kai, come sit down, come write your name, and now you need to write three words of your choice, and mom will help you with the rest. Step number four, Kai, sit down, write your name, pick odd or even number words, and start writing those, and mom will do the rest. Step number five, come sit down, write your name, and I need you to write nine words, and I will do the last one so we can finish the task. And finally, step number six, Kai will write all of his spelling words. Now remember, if at any time you need to take a step back, it is okay. So guidelines for using shaping. Identify the first behavior you want to reward. Proceed in small steps. Even if your child is doing well, don't jump ahead three steps because you are increasing your child's effort, but you're not increasing the reward. So always proceed in small steps. Set a limit of approximations that will be rewarded at each level. So, for example, if Kai can come and sit down three separate times and write his name, I'm ready to move to step two. If Kai can sit down and write one spelling word five times, then I'm ready to move to step three, and so on. So give yourself a guideline how many times you're going to reinforce the approximation before your child is ready to move on to the next step. I usually do three to five depending on the child. And always continue to reward until you reach the target behavior. Shaping is a useful method to use with children at any developmental level. It does not require the child to have an existing level of speech or comprehension of speech. Shaping can be used with outspoken instructions, although praise and encouragement through words usually accompanies the reward. So shaping is a very easy to use, and it's actually very successful at teaching so many different types of skills, and it is my preference. I use shaping in all of my teaching with my clients, especially when I'm taking them to the dentist and I'm taking them to see the doctors. Our last teaching approach is teaching new skills using prompts. Prompts are also great. So why prompts are an important part of teaching new skills? Well, the main thing is that the function of a prompt is to produce the occurrence of a behavior so that it may be reinforced. Can you imagine having your boss ask you to write a report, and every time you write the report, she says, that's not the way I want it, do it again. And then you write the report again, and she still says, that's not the way I want it, do it again. After a while, you know what that consequence is going to be, so you give up writing the report, and you will start having a negative attitude towards your boss asking you to write reports. Children are no different. You have to make sure that they are successful if they want to keep coming back and having that interaction with you. So the function of a prompt is to make sure that they don't provide an incorrect response. And if you provide a correct response, here's the reward. Here's what we are getting out of this. Okay, prompts also help children perform correct responses again so that the behavior can be reinforced. In the end, that's what you want to teach your child, and you want to reinforce and increase behaviors that we want to see more of. Prompts are efficient when it comes to teaching new skills because they don't have to do it alone. You're helping them, and you're sitting with them, and you are following every step of the way. Okay, and it also increases the chances that the correct response will occur. So the three common prompts that we use, verbal instruction, you are telling the child what they need to do. Modeling, you're demonstrating the behavior. Modeling is very easy and practical to use. And then physical guidance, it's effective, but remember it's also a very intrusive prompt. It requires direct physical involvement between you and your child. Usually the rule of thumb is you start with least to most. So you start with a verbal And if they're not able to understand that prompt, then you move into a model, an imitative prompt, and then you move into physical guidance. Okay, if you have a child and you've been working on a specific skill for a week and the child is still having a difficult time grasping the concept, then you want to move more to a most to least. So you start with the physical guidance, and then once they start doing really well with the physical guidance, you move to a modeling prompt and then to a verbal instruction prompt. So we will see just several examples of the different types of prompts. So in the verbal prompt, your target behavior is saying thank you. The verbal instruction is, and what do you say? Okay, so you are setting what the target is, and then you are giving them a verbal reminder of what is needed to be said for you to contact the reward. In a modeling prompt, the target behavior can be raise arms, and then the model, the parent, is raising his or her arms to show the child what needs to be done. Okay, and again, once the child does exactly what the parent has asked, that's when they contact the reward. Usually the instructions when we're using modeling prompts is do this. And then we look at a physical prompt. So the target behavior can be tying shoes, and the physical prompt would be guide them using a hand-over-hand approach to get them to tie their shoe. Now remember, physical prompts are the most intrusive. They are effective, but you want to be careful because certain children will become prompt-dependent, meaning why should I do this on my own when I know eventually someone is going to help me? And that's why prompts are wonderful to use, but as quickly as you introduce that guideline, that assistance, you also have to take that assistance out. So effective prompting. Effective prompts focus the child's attention to the instruction. They should be as weak as possible. You want to be able to use least to most. Start with a verbal, then a model, then a physical. And then you want to remove it as quickly as possible because your child will become dependent on you helping them. So how do we get children to achieve his or her potential? We have to create opportunities in the environment for the behavior that you want to occur. Every opportunity is a teaching opportunity. Do not set your expectations too high. You know your child best. You have to teach at your child's pace. Use things that your child enjoys as rewards. A lot of the times, we like to assume that we know what is rewarding to the child. But remember to look at the behavior. If the behavior is not increasing and you're providing a reward, then that reward is not motivating your child. So make sure that you offer different types of rewards and just observe and see what your child is gravitating to and use those as rewards. Allow choices when possible, especially when you're dealing with older children and they want to negotiate everything. Let them have some sense of control. And most importantly, be consistent in any approach that you use. Consistency is the key. Practice makes perfect. Regardless of each child's starting point, all children will acquire more skills with the appropriate teaching strategies. And research has shown that behavioral strategies are effective at increasing and developing new behaviors. It's also important to start at a level where your child can experience as much success as possible. If your child is not successful at the activities that you try or is not able to complete them independently, it may be necessary to simply try an easier activity. This should not be considered a setback, and I can't stress this enough. Children with autism can be inconsistent in their ability to use their skills. One day your child may be communicating using words. The next day he goes back to using pictures. Okay, so take a step back, bring out those rewards, and get him back to where he's consistently using words as the form of communication. I hope that I provided useful tips that you can utilize in everyday situations, and thank you. Amber, I'm sending it back to you.
Thank you. To help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in this survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Please tell us the degree to which you agree or disagree with the following statements. Question 1. This session provided me with education on shaping new behaviors. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. We'll pause for just a moment. Question 2. This session educated me on specific procedures to teach new skills to a child with autism. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. We'll pause for just a moment. We are still gathering a few additional responses. Question 3. Overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Star 1, strongly agree. Star 2, agree. Star 3, disagree. Star 4, strongly disagree. And we'll pause for just a moment. And we are still waiting on a few more additional responses. Question 4, I would recommend this program to others. Press star 1 if you agree or star 2 if you do not agree. And we'll pause for just a moment. We are still waiting on a few more additional responses. Question 5, please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Star 1, I am the parent of a child with autism. Star 2, I am a family of a member with a child with autism. Star 3, other. We'll pause for just a moment. And we're still waiting on a few more additional responses. Thank you for your feedback and for participating in our program. If you would like to make any additional comments to help us improve this program or have any questions on today's topic, please press star 1 to have your line open into the conference. Once again, star 1. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal. And we'll take our first question.
Hi, my name is Katie. I just had a quick question. I have a 7.5-year-old, soon to be 8. Is it typical for, I know that they regress sometimes, but, you know, he gets very aggressive now, the older he gets with his frustration, and he started hitting himself in the head, and I don't know, he's never done that before, so I don't know if aggression is just something that comes with age, or if it's just that he's a boy also and some of that just being, I don't know, you know, it just gets frustrating because he gets really frustrated and doesn't know how to take out his behavior except aggressively now.
Is your child verbal? Is he able to communicate?
Well, yes, but, you know, his verbal skills, he wasn't verbal until he was 4 and now he talks, but now he's regressing in speech some. And I don't know if that's just, if it's, you know, because it's very common to what he was doing when he was younger, although the hitting is new. But, you know, I don't know if he's just frustrated because he can't communicate like that anymore or if it's, you know, because he's having issues. I don't know. But I feel bad because I don't know how to help him, and I don't want to see him hurting himself either, you know.
Right. One of the things that you need to do is observe in what situations your child is starting to hit himself. And then it might be a communication issue. It also might be just the frustration of him not understanding how to do the specific task that you've asked him to do. Self-management is great. So once you start to see, okay, every time I present this direction to him, he starts to hit himself, you might want to say, before you even present it, I'm going to show you something that's going to make you mad. If you get mad here, touch a card and ask me for a break. Okay? And then start to slowly increase that with, thank you for asking me for a break. Now you need to calm yourself. Let's breathe and count to 10. A lot of times this could be a combination of different things, but it, without you observing and seeing what specific situations trigger that behavior,
right.
Once you have that component, then you can start a self-management program and really focus on functional communication. I can't stress that enough. Let's get him communicating his needs. That is the most important.
Okay. Now, my other question is, he was always very self sufficient, or he started to get self-sufficient in dressing himself, and that's another area where he's regressed. He won't do anything for himself. Mom, I need help with this. Mom, I need help with that. And that's fine, but, you know, I started trying to do, like, a sticker chart or something, or some sort of reward. Now, if I give him, you know, if we do, like, a token system, or if we do a sticker chart, do I need to give him another reinforcement on top of that, like a little treat, or is that sufficient enough to be a, you know what I'm saying?
Right, I do know what you're saying, and if it's not increasing the behavior, then the sticker chart is not serving as a reward. So
okay.
You have to make sure that what you're offering him is actually going to motivate him. Instead of waiting a week of dressing himself independently, I need you to dress yourself in 5 minutes, and if you can earn this sticker today, we can go out and get some ice cream.
Okay.
Also look at your consequence. If you're constantly providing him the help, you need to start fading that out. And weekends are a wonderful way to practice that because you're not in a hurry to get anywhere. So you can wait him out a little bit longer.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question. Caller, your line is open. Please go ahead. And we'll take our next question.
Yes, I have a question regarding my son who has always had problems with eating. Eats about 6 things in total. And which prompt, he's 12 years old, so adolescent, which prompt would you recommend for him at his age and also to help with possibly expanding what he eats?
I would start with just the shaping procedure. Have you had him undergo eating programs before and protocols to expand?
Yes, unfortunately, for several years, and we were not successful through children. So,
okay. Then I would start with just picking things. Are there things that he used to eat that he no longer eats?
No.
Okay, so what are the things that he currently eats?
Quesadilla. Peanut butter, jelly, hot dog, and chicken nuggets. Fruits are banana and raisins.
And what are some of the things you want him to eat?
I would like to expand his fruit content, and he really needs more protein, especially at his age. So we're trying to introduce a slice of apple or a slice of pear, those things that he does not eat at every meal or every other meal.
Right.
But protein
is important, right?
I'm sorry, what?
Hello?
Yes? Oh. Hello?
And just a moment. It seems like we've lost Wendy. And, Kristen, we have lost Wendy.
Okay, I'm so sorry about that. We will go ahead and wrap up for today. Again, we encourage you, if you have any questions regarding specific therapies or anything you heard in today's topic, if you'll just go ahead and call the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card, we would love to talk to you about your autism benefits and additional resources for you and your family. And please be sure to mark your calendars to join our next Autism Awareness Seminar on March 13th at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, when we will be discussing gaining compliance. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference. You may now disconnect.